What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Deer Vein Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Heller, and today we are going through kind of some second rut stuff and what I like to call like the second shift, or you could kind of call it a third shift, but more or less a second shift. In the deer activity, where you should be hunting and what kind of this early December to mid late December looks like for a lot of people. Before I get into that, just super fast, and I'm going to try to make this as fast as possible, which is thank you to the partners of the show, Onyx Maps, Origin, and Jocko Fuel, as well as Elite Archery. They're all awesome partners, all great people. Definitely check out their products if you're interested in any of those. Onyx is GPS mapping, Elite Archery is bows, and then Origin and Jocko Fuel supplement lines, you know, like protein, pre-workout, creatine, vitamins, all that kind of fun stuff. And then Origin is 100% made clothing as well as camo. I've ran their camo for 2 years now. Really like it, especially the stealth wool pants, but then also, you know, jeans, hoodies, belts, wallets, all that kind of fun stuff, boots. Yeah, just want to introduce those real quick. And then also, yeah, for the Origin and the Jocko Fuel stuff, Heller 10, H-E-L-L-E-R, and then the numbers 10 will get you 10% off that. All right. So with that, I wanted to, that was probably the fastest intro I've ever done on the partner side of things. This podcast will probably be a little bit shorter. I wanted to talk about the second rut and the second shift. So this is something that a position I've been in the last few years when I don't have tags filled is like after Thanksgiving, I'm like, all right, what am I going to do now? You got in Wisconsin and other states, you got gun seasons, you got muzzleloader seasons, you're working around them. It's all sorts of additional pressure on the deer, and the rut's kind of over. And now you're looking at, you know, deer that have been running really hard. They're trying to put on the feed bag and get back some weight, but also they're trying to be killed by gun hunters and muzzleloader hunters and archery hunters. And then they've been constantly pushed around by pheasant hunters or duck hunters or squirrel small game hunters. Like, you have all this pressure throughout the season, and now it's really pushing the deer around and you're trying to figure out what to do next, right? It can be, it certainly can be a bit, inspires a lack of confidence. I'll tell you that. I went out pheasant hunting the other day with a buddy of mine, Riley, and we walked some pretty good habitat where we found a bunch of scrapes, a bunch of rubs, not a deer track to be seen, and it had snowed. I shouldn't say that. There was two sets of tracks that I saw, but usually if I'm in there when I would run cameras in that area, in the early season or mid season, especially around scrape time, you know, mid October, I would be getting multiple deer a day in this area. So it's just kind of goes to show you that there's a couple things going on. The biggest one is pressure. The pressure pushes deer to the hidey holes, even on private ground, even on our private land. We're seeing far fewer deer now than we did before. And private land's a little bit interesting, so I'm going to break this down between public and private. And I'll break that down after we go over the second rut. So first thing with the second rut, does the second rut exist? Yes. Is it a continuation of the first rut? Yes. Do people call it the second rut just because it's like kind of there's kind of a gap between the two times where you're seeing a lot of rutting activity? Yes. So don't try to beat me up on technicalities on this. What it is does come into heat, and that's when they are effectively like ovulating, or they can be bred and receive and be receptive to a buck and actually, you know, what is the word I'm looking for? Starts with a C. Is it consummate? I don't know. But that's effectively when a deer can have, when a doe can. It's not contraception. God, well, I can't think of the word. Someone is listening to this going, I know the word because I've been there and I can't think of it right now. But anyway, that is when they can receive a buck and be good to go and get pregnant, basically. So in late October and early November, that's the first time a doe comes into heat, right? I shot a buck this year on October 26th. He was breeding a doe. So does can come into heat early, and they can come into heat late. They can come into heat November 15th to the 20th. So they can come into heat late. But if they are not bred when they come into heat, 28-ish days later, they will recycle and come into heat again. And that is what people call the second rut. So let's, for instance, if my doe, the buck that I shot didn't breed that doe and she did not get bred on October 26, 27, 28, 29 when she was receptive, she would come back into heat at the end of November, November 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th, something like that. Okay. And same with does that are not bred on November 15th, they'll come back into heat December 10th or so. So that activity still exists. And so a good friend of mine, Austin, who was on the show, he shot a buck last year on like December 7th or 8th, and it was four bucks chasing one doe, and he was able to get one to stop for him, and he shot his nice 8-pointer. So you have that. That is the second rut with mature does. There are also fawns that can come into heat in early December. Once fawns hit like 60 to 70 pounds-ish, again, not an exact science, but once they hit that weight range, they can go into heat and they can be bred and they can get pregnant. So at that point, you know, you have basically fawns of the year that are going into heat. So you have two kind of options there. You have fawns of the year as well as does that did not get bred the first time around. And that's what generates the second rut. Okay. And that's what, and that's why people call it the second rut. And that's why it's kind of a continuation of the first rut, because you're really not stopping through the whole thing. It's just a new cycle. Right. So with all that said, that's what people call the second rut. And the real question is how does that affect your hunting? Should you be hunting the second rut like you would the first rut? Right? Should you be sitting downwind of bedding areas? Should you be sitting pinch points and funnels? Should you, you know, be rattling and snort wheezing and grunting and trying to call in deer and pretending, trying to make a scene that there's something going on? Should you be decoying? Now, the answer to that is probably not. It's unlikely. And it's because of this. And there's a couple factors that play into this. But if you think about it, the does, if you're thinking about a scenario where does would come into heat again, right, where they wouldn't get bred, it's very likely in those scenarios you're going to have a very high doe to buck ratio. Okay, so if you have, for instance, if you have 10 does to one buck, let's use kind of extremes, you have 10 does to one buck, and all those does come into heat at like the same time. It's one big family group. That buck is unlikely going to be able to breed all of those does at the same time, right? In that same 3 to 4 day window, you know, in a lockdown phase, that buck pretty much sticks with one doe for 2 days, 2 to 3 days straight. And because he's trying to basically get her pregnant and make sure that she gets pregnant with his babies, not somebody else's. Right. So he's sticking there with her. So if you got 10 does coming into heat at basically the same time, he can't possibly breed all of them. I mean, he could if he's a champion, but that's besides the point. It's unlikely. So in that scenario, there's probably does that are going to come back into heat again, right, in early December, because they just don't get bred the first time. On the flip side, if you have 10 bucks to one doe, that doe is extremely likely to get bred, and it's extremely likely you will not experience a second rut. So if you have, you know, ratios that are out of whack, it's probably not going to happen. If you have ratios that are close to 50-50, it probably will happen. All right. And that's where it really plays into different scenarios. How many does do you have? How many bucks do you have? How many? Because I know on our private property where we have a whole bunch of cameras out, I know we have about 6 to 8 like resident does that basically live on our property. And there's probably in mid-October, there was like 4 young bucks that called our property home and 1 or 2 bigger bucks that would like kind of come in and out. And that was on 100 acres. So you're talking 8 does and $2 on 100 acres, or 8 does and 4 bucks, so 12 deer on 100 acres, that kind of called it home. Now, again, it was 8 does to 4 bucks, so that's a good ratio, but then you throw in those 2 mature bucks, and they're probably moving stuff around, so it's 8 to 6. That's a good ratio. It's unlikely that that we're going to have a whole lot of second rut activity on our property. However, you know, that doesn't mean it can't happen. I did get trail camera pictures of a buck chasing a doe in late November, about a week ago. So does that mean that she was in heat? I don't know. Maybe it was a little tiny buck. Maybe he was just sniffing around for something and he wasn't on the right trail. But the big picture there is I can't tell you whether or not you're going to have it. And you probably don't have enough data. Maybe you do, but it's probably unlikely that you can guarantee that you're going to have a second rut as well. And with that in mind, and even if you could guarantee that, like, which doe is it and where is she bedding and where is that family group living, to be able to hunt that like you would the rut is probably unlikely as well. Most of us don't know exactly how the deer move throughout our property like that and where they want to bed and what groups they're with and all that kind of stuff. So I say all that to say, should you hunt like you would the rut? Probably not. You're probably going to want to key in on pressure, unpressured areas and food sources. And this is where earlier where I said I'd break it down between public and private land. Unpressured food sources unpressured areas or food sources. It's one or the other. And if you can find both, phenomenal. That's fantastic. You see a lot of guys like, I know Josh Bomar is one of them because I see it every year. Greg Glessinger, who's on the podcast a couple times, awesome hunter. He's a good one to talk to this about. They love the late season food sources because deer are slaves to their stomach at that point, and they have unpressured private land, great food sources that pull the deer in, and they can sit in a box blind. Same with the Heartland bow hunter guys. And they can sit in the box blind in a nice warm heated area and just hang out and wait and just see all these deer pile into these fields. And that is something that you really don't, I personally don't experience on our private land or on public land by me. So it's not a tactic that I find relevant for my scenario. If you have that capability, hell yeah, good for you. And I'm not downplaying it by any means. I wish I had that activity. Every hunter wishes they could sit in a beautiful box blind over, you know, a 10 to 20 acre standing soybean field in December and just have deer pile in and be like, ooh, there's the one we're looking for. You know, let's see if we can get him closer and get in for a shot. Right? Like, that's what people want. It's just not a reality for a lot of people as well, including myself. So when you're looking at late season and post rut and post like activity, this pressure, the thing that I find is that the deer will move to unpressured and extremely thick cover where people do not really want to go. We're talking swamps. We're talking 5 miles deep instead of 3 miles deep. We're talking, you know, briar thickets. We're talking just little pockets where humans just don't necessarily go, and areas where you walk one time and you go, Jesus, I never want to walk back through there again. And I know a few areas like that. And I know, like, and especially if you are in one of the more northern states and you can get snow on the ground, you can really clearly understand where these deer are kind of heading. And when we were pheasant hunting, the two sets of tracks that I did come across were going back into this dirty, thick swamp that I haven't ever walked through in my life because it's just so gnarly. I haven't even gotten the balls to do it. And I go through a whole lot of shit. It's one of my favorite things to do. But this one is just nasty. And that's where these tracks were headed. So it's, and I can almost guarantee you hunters don't go back there. And even if they could, they can't really push it because it's just so thick. And we're talking like a 5 to 10 acre chunk of just thickness. So deer can kind of hide in there pretty easily. So you're looking for those unpressured bedding areas, and you're going to want to get real tight to them, like as tight as you can, right on the edge of them, because you know, earlier in the season where you might get the last hour of light where you're seeing movement, now you're getting the last 15 minutes of light, right? And they're just barely moving when they're getting out of their bed because, you know, people have tried to kill them for the last 2 months or month and a half or whatever it is. So you need to get real. This is how I would hunt it. I would hunt bed to food, and I would try to find those unpressured bedding areas and that are somewhat related to a food source. So this area that I'm thinking about right now is a thick, dirty swamp, and it's public land, and it borders private land that still has standing corn. Now, that private land is hunted really heavily during gun season, so it pushes a lot of the deer out of there. Same with the private land, hunted heavily, driven heavily, pushes a lot of deer out of there. But in time, with that standing corn being there, it's going to pull them back. It has to pull them back. Like, they don't really have a whole lot of other options in this area. So it's going to bring them in. It's just when. And for that, I would be like, if I were in the scenario where I was looking for these deer, I would be dropping cameras around this standing corn that borders it with the public. There's a couple different spots of public that you can get to, and that's where I'd be going. And I'm not talking like the bedding area doesn't need to be 50 yards from this or 100 yards. It can be 400, 500, 600 yards. When you're in this late season style of hunting, a buck is willing to walk 45 minutes for him to get to a food source and not die versus him being close to that food source and only having a 5 minute walk, but being a whole lot of pressure and problems, right? They're willing to go a long ways because that's what it means to survive. And if they need to go and night is longer now for them too. Instead of only being, you know, 8 hours of darkness, they now have 12 hours of darkness. So that extra time doesn't really matter because they still get their 8 hours in that field where they're picking away at all the corn, and they can browse the whole way there and back. So it's you have to expand your range a little bit. And especially like if you're getting pictures of deer along these like ag field edges, and I'll go into non-ag field stuff too, but this is just a scenario I'm thinking of off the top of my head right now that's relevant, is if you're getting pictures of these and it gets dark at 5 o'clock right now and you're getting pictures at 7, you know, they're probably coming from a long ways off, taking 2 hours, an hour and a half to get to you. They're probably coming from a ways off. It's probably not right there. And that's when you start going, okay, where are they coming from? Where's the trails? How do I move my cameras back? How do I like push back until I get to these bedding areas where I think they might be? And the nice thing about late season is the vegetation's gone, and walking 400 yards is not nearly as hard in December as it is in August when all the vegetation's up and you can't see anything. So, you know, it broadens and it opens up the landscape to where you can move a lot more. So that's like what I'm thinking of right now. And that's like an idea that I would have. And this is what I would call like the second shift, which I mentioned right away off the beginning, is the second shift from, you know, you have deer in their early season in their summer food patterns, and the shift occurs when they shift in October to their like mid-season grounds where, you know, they kind of move to the velvet drops, the food sources change, you know, soybeans are no longer friendly and they're moving towards corn or they're moving towards alfalfa or whatever, they're moving to acorns, so they shift their bedding and get ready for rut and all that jazz. And then again, this pressure shifts them all again. And this is when you get this second shift in this late season where the bedding areas change. These bedding areas, if you can find them, I cannot stress enough how important it is to scout in December, January, February, March, and April. Like if you can find them, they usually exist year over year in the same spots on public land, because public land, it doesn't, the pressure usually stays the same year over year on public land. You might get more of it, but it's very, very likely that the more is going to the same areas. Like I've been hunting this piece by my house for 7 years now, and I still run cameras in my far back honey holes that I find and whatnot, and I still rarely come across people. I see a lot of people, and I feel like there's more people out there hunting, but I see them just as close to the parking lot as I did in day one. It's just more people per acre in the easy to get to spots than it is in the far back spots. So, and it just deters some people too. They're just like, ah, I'm not even going to hunt this. You got to go, you know, a mile back through a swamp, through a, you know, across a river, blah, blah, blah. And they're just like, I'm just not interested. I'm going to go find somewhere else to hunt. So like, if you can find these bedding areas, they usually exist in the similar areas year over year. And again, it also matters because, public land isn't, some of it is, but not a ton of it is manipulated by, you know, your state parks and wildlife. You know, if you're hunting big timber and they do a logging cut, obviously that's going to significantly impact it. But where I'm hunting, it's a lot of swamp, some high ground, some swamp, some river, some like kind of bottomy areas. So, and a lot of this stuff is untouched year over year. And this, the really high stem count areas exist in the same spots year over year. And the pressure comes from the same parking lots year over year. And they drive the same woods year over year. And so it just kind of pushes all these deer into specific areas where I can go out with a camera right now. If I had 10 cameras, I could put 10 cameras probably on deer bedding areas and figure out which spots are holding deer right now, because there's probably only 10 to 15 of them that are kind of quote unquote safe zones. Did it a long time ago. I kind of drew out a heat map for myself. Where am I running into people? Where am I seeing pressure? And I kind of made this map. And then once I made that map and looked at it, like visually, I was like, oh, I need to hunt here, here, and here, because this is where I'm never seeing people. So that's where I started going, and that's when I started finding beds in the wintertime, and that's where I started finding more tracks and more sign and more rubs and all the stuff that you'd expect. So again, like scouting, that's really important, and finding those unpressured areas, because that's where these deer are shifting to. Now, the other big thing is food. Like I know I talked about egg, and big egg is what holds a lot of deer. And it's the experience that I have. I don't have big woods experience, so I can't talk too much to that and where you're going to try to find food. But deer in this second shift, when they're getting ready for late season, they will travel miles to get to solid food sources that are going to sustain them through the winter. They're not really interested in, you know, half-assed food sources that are barely going to get them by. They're trying to find the big stuff. So what this means for you is if you're hunting, you know, a 100-acre piece, a 400-acre piece of public land, or even, you know, private land, you're hunting 40 acres or even a 40-acre public, doesn't matter. The deer that were there, if there is not food there, they are not going to continue to be there. And you need to relocate the deer. You need to go find a new piece of property. That was probably one of the biggest key factors for me in terms of finding quality deer in the late season over the last couple of years, and finding these spots was I never settled on a single spot that was good for me during the rut. A lot of the spots I like during the rut are terrible late season, just because they're great pinch points, great funnels on pieces of public, but they just don't hold the food. And you got to go find the food. You got to find where a farmer had to leave his corn, and you got to go drive, and you got to go check ag fields. You got to go drive around. You got to shine where you can. I've spotlight before around our place. It's legal in Wisconsin to shine until I think 10 o'clock, as long as you don't have weapons in the car, so you can shine. Or you can just go and look for these food sources. You know, you don't want a tilled up cornfield. You want, just a picked cornfield where it's not tilled or anything. It's still there, or even standing corn or standing beans. You know, those are the places you're looking for. And if you can find that, then you're stopping, you're getting out of your truck, you're walking that field edge, you're checking for sign, and you're checking for trails, and maybe dropping a camera or two and then moving on to the next one. And then you're doing that for a whole day. Like I strongly suggest, even if it's a property you've never hunted before, use the time to go look around. There's enough pressure as it is already. You're not going to scare the deer any more than they already are, especially if you're just walking the borders. And again, that's what I would suggest. I wouldn't be heavily pushing into these bedding areas unless it's like what you need to do in order to find these deer. If you can't find the egg, then go push and try to find these bedding areas. But even when you do push them, they're there because it's the safest spot as it is. They're probably going to return to that. And again, they've experienced pressure for the last couple months, and they've probably been driven out of there before. Maybe one person walked through there during gun season or whatever. You're not going to screw it up. Like, I strongly suggest, like, I really don't think you're going to screw it up. So that's what I would be doing. I would be relocating, re-scouting, reconfiguring a plan, and reanalyzing all my information. Kind of like you're starting from scratch if you got nothing. Right? And a lot of times this time of year, you got nothing. All the bucks you were after in October or November are gone. You ain't seeing shit. You know, there's just a few deer walking around, and you're getting them at odd hours, like middle of the day or at 2 a.m. or 11 p.m. Like, it's just not working. It means you got to, like, you got to toss that spot aside that you really liked, that you wanted to hunt. You toss it aside and go find where you can actually killable deer. Where am I going to be able to find food, find bedding that's good for probably, you need to find north wind spots, south wind spots that have decent access, that have good trails, good sign. And it's not easy to do. By no means is it easy. But it's, so like a buddy, Austin, and I, again, guy that killed that buck last year on like December 8th, him and I scouted this chunk, and it was, man, it was thousands of acres. And I didn't tell him that I was scouting it, and he didn't tell me that he was scouting it. And one day we ended up 50 yards apart in basically the same area. I was in a tree, and this dude walked in on me, and he got all set up and everything. I watched him. I was like, dude, what is this guy doing? I tried to wave him down. And when he got to his tree, he turned his back to me and he climbed right up his tree, and he was really slick and smooth with it. And I pulled up my binos and I was looking, I was like, oh my God, I think that's Austin. I'm not sure if it is or not. And then he gets up in the tree and gets to the stand, turns around, he looks over and he sees me. And I just wave to him and he waves back at me and he starts to climb down. And I texted him and I was like, hey man, you don't have to leave. It's cool. And he like looked at his phone, looked up, looked at me, and he was like, what? And him again, it was that scenario was about scouting thousands of acres, a couple thousand acres of swamp, and finding just the sign where all these deer were, was in this back little corner in this one area. And there was sign galore, and him and I ended up in the same area. And it was the only area that had sign galore. Everything else seemed desolate, like a freaking desert, except for right here. And it's because all of this stuff gets pressured, and I've hunted it a couple of years now, so much of this stuff gets pressured, but then they have this little pocket that's a no hunting zone. It's like 20 acres that some dude owns, and no one's ever in there, and it's super thick. You can't see into it past 20 yards, and they just lay down in there, and they got ag fields galore all around them. But they have to cross through this strip of public in order to get to the ag. So it's just like this little tiny piece that you'd never suspect, but that was where they all were. And that was found again through just driving and scouting and driving and scouting and driving and scouting until, again, with snow on the ground, till you find a whole bunch of tracks and you're like, Jesus, this is where they are. I got to get set up in here. So I strongly suggest, like, in this, the whole point of this podcast is to try to, I've failed a lot in the late season, and I've also had some success in the late season. And the success has come from relocating, re-scouting, reanalyzing, and reconfiguring a plan, basically starting from scratch and going back after it and hunting a bed to food pattern, not a second rut pattern. I think you can, if you relocate the right food source and everything, you're probably going to run into second rut activity just because the does are there going from bed to food, and the bucks will eventually join in too, especially if there's a hot doe. You might just get involved in that mix by chance anyway. So that is my big suggestion for if you're still looking to fill your buck tag, and you've been hunting the same area and now it's like super pressured, you saw a ton of people out there. You got to get on your feet. You got to get moving. You got to get looking and get driving, and don't be afraid to look at new pieces. Even if you're hunting private, sometimes, like our property right now in Dodgeville, Wisconsin, is not good. Like, cameras are not good. Like, I wouldn't hunt it. there's nothing good like that's going on right now there. There's nothing that says I should be there. I think there's better activity around the public by me. I think I have better odds around the public by me than I do at RB just because it's a lack of food sources. I've hunted that property for 4 or 5 years in late season now, and it just sucks. It just does. There just isn't the food that you're looking for, or the activity that you're looking for on it. And so I would stay clear there, and I would go looking on public, and I would start trying to find something that gives me confidence to sit down and bear the cold for 3-4 hours. So that's my big big ideas for the second rut and the second shift. If you guys have any questions or anything like that, certainly feel free to hit me up on Instagram or Facebook or shoot me an email or anything like that. If you guys enjoyed the podcast, enjoyed the tips and everything, the conversation I had today, please like, subscribe, tell a friend to take a listen to it. If they're in the same boat, that would be really helpful. And then wish you all the best in late season. Catch you next time.